This is the Inland Journal from Spokane Public Radio. I'm Doug Nadvornik. This week, Seattle pollster Stuart Elway released a new survey that shows Republican Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers holds a 6-point lead over Democrat Lisa Brown in Washington's 5th District Congressional race.
Basically, we wanted to take a look at this race for the 5th Congressional District at the beginning. There's a long time till election, but where are the candidates starting out?
Among the 400 or so people surveyed, McMorris Rodgers was favored by 44%. Compared to 38% for Brown. 3% chose another candidate. 16% were undecided.
I think probably the striking thing is how close it is. McMorris Rodgers has been there for a while and has won rather handily in each of her previous elections. So to have Lisa Brown this close this early is not a familiar position.
The poll was commissioned by 5 media organizations, including Spokane Public Radio. The others are the Spokesman Review, the Lewiston Tribune, the Walla Walla Union Bulletin, and KHQ-TV. Let's dig into a few specifics. The poll shows an equal percentage of voters approve of McMorris Rodgers' job rating as disapprove, 45-45. Elway says the demographic numbers show where the differences are.
So men like McMorris Rodgers by a 23-point margin, and women like Brown prefer Brown by an 8-point margin. So there's quite a gender gap here. And to a large degree, that reflects what's going on here and nationally in party identification.
McMorris Rodgers has the support of people who self-identify as Republican, 80% to 6. She wins over independent voters, 40% to 32. She has a healthy lead among people with a high school education or some college. She has a slight lead, 3 points, among people who are college graduates. Brown, who's a college professor by vocation, wins among those with graduate degrees. She was also the pick of 85% of people who identify as Democrats. The poll also asked how people view President Trump's job performance. It shows 45% approve, 50% don't. The poll also asked about 2 specific issues, the first dealing with guns.
The question was, do you favor establishing an age limit of 21 for the purchase of semi-automatic rifles? And 62% of our likely voters said they supported such a proposal, which may be somewhat surprising given the district. There's a sense, at least nationally, that this issue is shifting a bit from largely as a result of the activity of these high school kids out of Florida mobilizing public opinion.
The second question asked whether people support Congress continuing efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare.
And it was split right down the middle. 47% said yes, continue to try to repeal it, and 47% said no.
Those who favored repeal overwhelmingly identified as Republican and vice versa. We talked with several respondents and asked them to explain their answers. Pat Clark of Spokane is a Republican who supports President Trump and Kathy McMorris Rodgers.
I like all that she's trying to do, and she works very hard at trying to put good values and what's best for the American people, in my opinion.
Clark favors the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, but in a bit of a twist, she also supports a higher age limit for buying automatic rifles.
If somebody wants a gun, they're going to get a gun from their folks or wherever, but I think it wouldn't hurt to have a higher age before they get one so they aren't in the schools at the time and might get a little more maturity before they have it.
Were your views influenced by some of the school shootings that have happened around the country in the last year or so?
Yes, I think so, because I'm definitely not for gun control.
On the other end of the political spectrum is Deidre Allen from Greenbluff. She identifies as a Democrat. She has strong views about President Trump. She views him as unfit to serve in the office. She's also not a supporter of McMorris Rodgers. She says the Congresswoman is rarely available to meet with constituents.
I was also very disappointed in her stand on guns in the schools. I don't think arming teachers is the answer. And she's still, you know, tied into the NRA. So she thinks that gun ownership is more important than the lives of our children. And I just think that's wrong.
Allen opposes efforts to overturn the ACA.
It's a travesty that the cost of just routine doctor's visits out of the reach of most people. And I don't think that in a country as prosperous and as developed as ours that should be the case.
David Thompson of Chatteroy identifies as a Republican. He also worries about high medical costs, especially those that he's been paying this year. But he views ACA as partially responsible for those, and so he supports its repeal.
My bookkeeper goes, you paid $18,000, and she goes, you're still showing about another $18,000 in medical bills. She goes, what's your insurance doing for you? I go, not much.
Thompson would vote for Kathy McMorris Rodgers, especially because he likes her strong support of Second Amendment issues.
I've had guns since I was knee-high. I grew up with rifles. Cub Scouts, we'd go out shooting 22s, and I used to have just tons of deer bird rifles, and I got had a pistol, and then went in the Coast Guard and became an expert shot. After I got out of the Coast Guard, I got an AR, and I loved it ever since.
Kurt Langlin of Deer Park identifies as an independent. He supports raising the age for buying semi-automatic weapons, and he likes the way New Zealand handles gun ownership.
You go down to the police station, they give you a form. You fill out that form, they do a background check. Then they give that form to you, and you have to take it to a gun club. And at the gun club, you go through a gun safety program. And after you've gone through the gun safety program successfully, then you take it back to the police station. A retired police officer then goes to your home and makes certain that you have two locked facilities, one for the weapon, one for ammunition. Now, that seems sensible. They don't mind hunters. They don't mind sports shooters, but they're more logical.
Like Deidre Allen, Langlin feels strongly that President Trump has done a poor job as president, but he supports Kathy McMorris Rodgers.
Yeah, I'm kind of an odd fellow. I believe in fiscal conservatism, but I'm also see the importance of social services. So I never find an ideal candidate. But Kathy McMorris at least seems to be a genuine person.
Economic development issues are important to Meredith Banka of Spokane. She identifies as a Democrat and supports Lisa Brown.
My husband and I were small business owners here, and I run a business from home. And I think that Spokane is really starting to emerge as the amazing community that we've already always known it as. But I think we're now on the radar in Seattle. We're now on the radar in Portland. People are going to be moving here. I'm not seeing the economic growth and development supported at the congressional level that I would have expected.
Banka opposes efforts to toss out the ACA, saying Obamacare made health care affordable for her family.
We were able to obtain really great health insurance at a time that we were really kind of rebuilding as a family from a financial and career perspective. And without that, my kids would have had really horrible, if any, insurance at all.
Our final poll respondent is Jonathan Bingle of Spokane, probably the youngest person we interviewed. He identifies as independent, and he hasn't yet decided on Kathy McMorris Rodgers or Lisa Brown. He also hasn't decided yet about a minimum age for owning semi-automatic firearms.
For me, I'm fine with whatever age we decide, whether it be 18, 21, whatever it is, just as long as it's consistent.
One thing he is sure of, he doesn't like that he was required to buy health insurance.
Every option that my wife and I were given were just so expensive, and we couldn't really afford it, and so it put us into a bad position because we had to have it. And now we have, healthcare that's not any good that I have to pay for, and it's one of my most expensive bills.
Stuart Elway says this 5th District congressional poll is only a snapshot in time, but it confirms the notion that the race between Kathy McMorris Rodgers and Lisa Brown figures to be unusually competitive.
This might be the best race in our district since Foley and Nethercutt.
Oh, I think it is.
25 years ago.
I think it is, and I polled on that one too and was telling people, watch out. Something's going on over there.
Were there somewhat similar results back then?
Well, let me look.
Elway starts searching for the results of polls of that race from 1994.
I had a poll, in September, that's a little later in the year, I had Nethercutt ahead of Foley, and nobody was believing me. I had, it was a much smaller sample, but I had Foley leading by 40 to 36 in April of 1994.
So that's pretty darn close to what you've got this year.
Pretty similar, yep.
Perhaps we'll check in with Stuart Elway later this year and see if this race follows a similar trajectory to that 1994 race. We're going to spend the next several minutes in the infectious disease world. Emergency medical training happens all the time in our area, but an event yesterday was unusual. In this case, a 747 en route from Boise landed at Spokane International Airport. It was carrying a staff of medical professionals and four patients pretending to have the Ebola virus. The nose of the plane opened up, and workers wearing special protective gear wheeled a gurney with a similarly gowned-up patient out to a lift. From there, they were lowered to the ground, and a medical worker walked with the patient to a waiting ambulance, which took them to Sacred Heart. The hospital is one of 10 in the nation designated by the federal government as a regional treatment center for people with deadly and transmissible diseases, such as Ebola. The other two patients were to be flown to Los Angeles later in the afternoon. As part of this exercise, the plane sat on the tarmac for a couple of hours to allow local officials, from the mayor to the regional health officer, to get a tour. We went along too. Imagine a huge airliner stripped of its seats, except for about 10 rows of two on the right side of the plane. The big jet is operated by Phoenix Air, which bills itself as the only company in the world capable of transporting highly infectious patients in an intensive care unit environment. It's the firm the State Department calls when it's necessary to move people with highly infectious diseases from overseas back to the U.S. The main features inside are two big white containers, each of the size of a single wide mobile home. These are the areas where the patients and their caregivers are quarantined. Over his blue jumpsuit, Vance Farabee wears a vest that reads Safety Officer. Farabee is the nurse manager for the Air Ambulance Division of Phoenix Air. He takes us inside one of these units. Farabee calls it a box. On a medical transport mission, this box is home to as many as 9 people, 5 medical staff, and up to 4 patients. The box has 3 areas. The main room is a unit with 4 metal cots where the patients can lie down, hooked up to medical monitors. Farabee takes us to a small room on the end where people enter the unit. You'll hear him reference 2 acronyms that are probably foreign to you. PPE stands for Personal Protective Equipment, and PAPR means Powered Air Purifying Respirator.
So what you have to visualize is in this very large space, we have our 5 caregivers. Each caregiver has 10 packs of PPE. So it's already been pre-sized, pre-selected by them, packed into their own Ziploc bag, and then we just tape them to the wall like potato chips at the checkout counter because we've got 50 bags of PPE. Because we wear PAPRs and the PAPR hoods don't compress very well, we have a box of 50 PAPR hoods in here. Then we've got food and drink for 9 people, and then everyone has a little box of their own personal stuff they want to mess with. And then spare supplies for items that we're not using in there. And so it's pretty snug, but you're so glad to get in here, you don't care. No one leaves the box once the trip begins. So if you're in the box, you're in the box till it's over. There's a camper toilet in here for our staff. There's 2 camper toilets in there for the patients. The shelf over the bed is where we mount all of our medical equipment, so monitors and IV pumps and whatnot, and the way it's currently set up, all of that is one-time use only. So if we were doing a real trip, then we're throwing away 4 monitors, 4 pumps, 4 ventilators, et cetera, et cetera. I think once this moves from training into real world, they'll probably try to think of another way to work that, but that's the way it is right now. So this again is where you don, and just like in all settings where this takes place, you have a person, what we call a trained observer, a TO, and they're reading from a very specific list that you've trained on, and they're telling you, take your left hand, lean forward, pull your hood, do this, da-da, wash your hands, now do this. So it's, especially on the doffing part, The time when a caregiver gets contaminated is typically during doffing. It's just poor technique or a break in technique that maybe you weren't even aware of. So the doffing is very, very important. The donning, important, but less so. And you just make sure that everything is covered, your PPE is intact, you've put things off in the right order so that you can take them off in the right order. So once you're dressed out in here, you move in here, you're not really doing anything, you're already dressed, you got your PAPR, and you go in here and you do your patient care. When we do the swap, person number four comes in here to relieve one of the three. And when they go in, you start the decon process actually in the patient compartment, which is the most contaminated area, because what we try to do is before we get into this room, which is still considered dirty, we're trying to get rid of a lot of the dirt, the potential contamination. So in here, we're wearing a little apron. You are completely sprayed and wiped down, including everything that can be reached by that person. And then as you transition in here, you're going to lose a pair of booties. So now you're in here just in your coveralls that have integrated booties. And then with that person guiding you, they're talking to you on a mic, they're looking at you through the window, they're reading from the thing, and they're watching to make sure that you're following correct technique. They tell you line by line to get rid of your PPE. You also are going to finish decontaminating your PAPR, and then it goes into a box here, and then you eventually transition in there. And then when you come back out, you're dressed out, you come in here, you get your same PAPR that you deconned, and you hook it up, and you go in there and go back to work.
Vance Farabee is the nurse manager of the Air Ambulance Division of Phoenix Air. Its 747 brought mock patients to Spokane yesterday to practice an Ebola scenario. Speaking of iconic airplanes, a World War II vintage plane landed at Feltz Field this week. It's known as the Boeing B-17 Flying Fortress. Nearly 13,000 were built, but only 10 are still flying today. Spokane Public Radio's Steve Jackson went out to take a ride.
This particular plane, Madras Maiden, was brought here by the Liberty Foundation, which sponsors tours to raise awareness of aviation history. John Eads is the foundation's mechanic, who's in charge of keeping a 73-year-old bomber in flying condition, and says the fact that the plane is being flown regularly is actually a good thing.
When we're operating, she is being looked at on a daily basis, so it becomes more easy to do it because you're finding things and correcting them right away. If it's just sitting there, things tend to break just even with an airplane sitting on the ground.
The B-17 set the standard for a four-engine, long-range heavy bomber in World War II. Even during the early development of the plane in 1935, Eads says a fatal crash on the very first flight didn't stop Boeing from proceeding with the project.
Ran off the end of the runway through a barn, caught the airplane on fire. All the engineers and the test pilots lost their lives. Mr. Boeing said, "I've got a mission. Make a checklist for me."
Eads says that fatal accident established the now normal procedure of a checklist before takeoff. The ruggedness of the plane that followed the development is legendary. There are numerous documented instances of B-17s returning safely to England from missions over Germany with only one of their four engines running, the wings, tails, and control surfaces torn apart by shrapnel. The visit of a B-17 to a community brings out a lot of those interested in the plane. Dave Morris is a pilot for the Liberty Foundation who says World War II veterans are among those, although their numbers are dwindling as the years go by.
More often than not, they'll be on a walker in a wheelchair, and they'll ease their way out to the airplane, and they get in the door, and the next thing they're up in the nose, they're running around. It's like an instant time machine. It's an amazing transformation to watch these guys.
On this visit, Spokane World War II vet Joe DeLay went in a flight of the Madras Maiden. Although he didn't serve as a B-17 crew member, DeLay was a paratrooper with the 101st Airborne who served during the Battle of the Bulge. He says Monday's flight was his second on a B-17.
I rode a B-17 from Fort Bragg, North Carolina to Seattle when I was discharged. Okay. I rode in the nose. That's the reason I always remember.
The B-17 will be at Feltz Field this weekend for those who wish to see it, and flights on board are available. I'm Steve Jackson reporting.
Tomorrow is the final program of our four-part Plan Well, Age Well series, which has been airing at 10 a.m. on KSFC. Our partner in this project is the Spokane Elder Resource Team. Friday's program explores financial planning for retirement and Social Security. Like some of the other providers we've talked to for this series, Joel Ferris got into the elder care business in part because of an experience with family. His mother needed custodial care. And what he learned is that he could help others as they navigate their own situations.
There's a lot of crisis management can happen if you don't have a plan in place. And also you have to figure out how you're going to pay for it. Where's that money going to come from? If you don't have a good plan in place, it could really disrupt your retirement plan. So that's why it's important to have something in the form of like some sort of insurance to help mitigate that risk.
Ferris is talking about long-term care insurance. He says it's something people don't tend to think about until they're, say, in their 50s, when they have to provide help for loved ones. He says they have several options, starting with in-home care.
But there's also assisted living, of course, and nursing care. Now, if you have a plan in place, your likelihood of needing nursing care is greatly reduced. And that's what really the goal is to have maximize your wellness going forward in your life so you don't have to worry about just jumping into nursing care at end of life.
Another issue seniors deal with is Medicare. That's the federal health plan, mostly for those 65 and older. Dennis Fletcher is head of a Spokane Valley financial group which sells Medicare plans. He says they can be intimidating at first, but easier to understand when they're explained.
Medicare is made up of four parts. Within those parts, you'll find all the plans. So when people talk about Medicare Part A, that would be your hospitalization, and Medicare Part B would be your doctors. Those are the two elements that really make up of Medicare. You'll find your plans in Medicare Advantage, which is considered Part C, and then you'll find your drug plans in Part D, obviously Part D for drugs, okay? And then you'll have Medicare supplements plans out there in the universe somewhere, which really doesn't have a letter to it.
Fletcher says how much you pay for your Medicare policies depends on your situation, including your income. Unlike some of these other issues we've mentioned, such as wills or long-term care insurance, Fletcher says people don't need to start way early when they think about Medicare.
Usually 6 months before they turn 65. If they decide to work longer, that's fine. They really need to see a licensed Medicare insurance agent because to let them decide whether they will stay with Part B or need to buy Part B or decline Part B, you know, something in that respect.
Dennis Fletcher and Joel Ferris will join us for the final program in our Plan Well, Age Well series. That'll be tomorrow at 10 a.m. on KSFC, 91.9 in Spokane, 100.3 in Coeur d'Alene. Inland Journal is Spokane Public Radio's weekly public affairs program. Podcasts are available at SpokanePublicRadio.org, and you can send your comments about the program to InlandJournal@KPBX.org. Or leave a message on our listener line at 509-232-6904. Thank you for your support of Inland Journal and Spokane Public Radio. I'm Doug Nadvornik.